And this is what that cowboy said to me. Lips, peckers, and assholes, they're all you're gonna meet along the way. Lips, peckers, and assholes, society gets worse every single goddamn day. This is Alex Linder, and I want to welcome you to the Pure Meat, Pure Gold Show, a.k.a. the Hot Dog Podcast. This is show number 003. I wasn't going to do more than one a week, but I had so much material I didn't even get to last time, even in the hour and 46 minutes that one endured slash went on for slash was incredibly enjoyable for. I want to get to the stuff I didn't get to. It's that important. I think you're going to love it. Let's go. All right, now, before we get going, we're going to start off by listening to a little tune from Bird 3.
I never want to go back. It's never been quite the same since we were all getting high in the back of your mom's Chevy. I never want to go there. It's never been quite the same. Those people are all too lame. Since then I forgot your name. I'll never go. I'll never go. I'll never go.
I got to stop it right there. This is the key thing that music can do. It can inspire us. You know, I had a whole different thing I was going to talk about, and we will get to it later, but I want to talk first about perversion. The best things I've ever written was when I was supposed to be writing something else. And I interrupted myself, and I just wrote what I wanted to write, what I needed to write, what was in me. That needed to come out, man. It was gestating, it was ready to be born, and it needed only the sly, joyous fun of like, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be writing this other shit, but I'm writing this shit, man, that I really want to write. I don't know if you know what I mean, but that sort of perversion is kind of in all of us, I think. And the Catholics worry about it, call it, you know, original sin or whatever, but yeah, I guess we are like that, but I can't help but notice, man. The stuff that I wrote was the best was when I interrupted myself to write it when I was supposed to be writing some boring, stupid-ass thing I didn't want to write. In college, supposed to be writing some stupid paper for some stupid class for some not-stupid professor who's assigned something stupid that I really don't care about, I don't want to write about. Now, I'm fluid and facile enough that I can write anything up in very short order and make it at least passable, but you know, you don't really learn anything that way, and you don't really learn from people who are teaching you stuff from an ideological position you don't believe. You learn from people who are in your own line who know more than you do. That's been my theory. It was my theory back in college, and I've never seen a reason to depart from it. I mean, you have to know the competing schools well enough to know why they're wrong, but once you know that, you know, you're not going to learn that much from a Marxist. Once you know that the assumptions that they're driving from. Anyhow, so I'm listening to Bird 3, and I'm thinking about art and thinking about the way that they do it. It's cool. And this has been something that's been popping up in my head. And you see, if I'm going to do a show, then why don't I talk about what I want to talk about instead of having... I always have some agenda, you know. And I really prefer free associating because everything that I know is related and integrated. I take Hitler's point of view. You read stuff, and you fit it. You kind of have a mosaic in your mind. You either clarify or discard stuff that's already in your mind based on the new material you garner from reading. Right? So you read something new or you come across some new information. You compare it with what's already in there, and it either clarifies and deepens and strengthens it. Or if there's a conflict, you have to resolve it. I remember my old boss, Tyrrell, saying he didn't like arguing because arguing is serious. You know, you either have to change your mind the stuff is not clowny. It's not a smorgasbord where you can take what you want. If there's two different ways of looking at something, you know, usually one of them has to die. But anyway, I had an artistic point I wanted to make, a point about how art is done. I think that Kurt Cobain, we heard the start of Bird 3. This is from the Van Wilder. You remember that movie. It's a very good movie. It's got Ryan Reynolds in it. It's funny, I think. But Bird 3, whoever heard of them? No one ever heard of them. But this song is really good. And you notice how they start off low. It probably sounded even extra low in this podcast in the first verse, and then they amp it up in the second. It comes on, and it completely heightens the powerful effect, and you're like, wow, that's freaking awesome. Now listen, listen to how quiet it is.
I never want to go back.
Yeah, okay, that's pretty good. It's kind of a cool melody. It's kind of a cool little idea, theme, a little nostalgia. Nostalgia seems to work really well. You know, a lot of great songs have been written about yesterday. So this guy's kind of looking back on that. But then the second verse, they come in.
I'll never go.
That is just beautiful and glorious. And it's set up, it's hyped, it's put into relief the way a woman might do shadows on her face with makeup, and it amplifies the effect. Now we take the theory that I believe goes back to Hemingway. Each word has to carry its weight. Like, writing is a grim task. And you'll find this repeated brainlessly in the way every time humans repeat something, it's brainless, because only the first guy puts some thought into it. So there may be a kernel or a nugget of something valuable there, but the subsequent people who are just repeaters, and 19 out of 20 people are repeaters from what I've read, and maybe 1 in 20 is a spark. But every word has to carry... No. That's not how it works. The writing equivalent, some words have to be fatty or loose or repugnant even, or disgusting or underlying or cunning. You have to set up your effects to throw them. You know, you can write stuff that's perfect and perfectly formatted and perfectly structured. We call that marketing. In art, it is my contention, perfection is imperfection, and imperfection is perfection. You have to make some bad stuff and some rough stuff so that when you break free, it's just the most glorious feeling in the world, and the effect is totally there, and you feel that in this Bird 3 song. I feel it. You want to create the feeling and the glorious feel. You know what it's like to be in a car and you're on the freeway. Say it's on like a two-lane fucking road. Say you're coming out of, you know, St. Louis in 4061 or something, and you're blocked up because of the river and the traffic, and finally you get to a point, finally that fucking truck pulls over, and you bust out, and there's no one ahead of you. You're like, oh my God, that feels good. That, if you can approximate, achieve that with your art the way Bird 3 does, again, it's glorious. That's why you do... The words are in these freaking, in the gym working out, and they all got to be strong. Not every word has to be a freaking muscle. I'm tired of that theory. You have to sometimes almost look like you don't know what you're doing, kind of find your way around, and then boom, there it is. Ball, beautiful, that comes out of the sheath like a erect, pumping penis. You know? And it is just, you know, you're like, wow, awesome, the spurt of life. Right, you feel that in the way that they communicate that. And I'm not a musicologist. I don't know the history of pop music. I don't know song construction, but Kurt Cobain was the first one. I've always been jealous of how the Washington Times described him years ago when I used to live in D.C. and read about 2 to 4 papers a day, as that they described him as a wet kitten. Perfect. Can't. Insuperable. It's inconceivable you could describe him better than that. With that kind of lank hair and his little blue eyes peering out through his blonde bangs. You know how he was, and you know his abort Jesus graffiti that he would spray. I'll tell you something you might not have known, though. He had perpetual chronic stomach pains. And, you know, that's probably why he killed himself, from what I could tell from reading about him. Another one who was always known for being crabby was Shannon Doherty. And you know what? She has Crohn's. And I'm like, wow, that would really account for why she seemed so crabby all the time, because it's hard to keep the effects of that kind of thing off your face. But anyway, as far as I know, Cobain, and probably, I'm sure there's precursors to everything, but as far as I know, I mean, Michael Jackson didn't invent the moonwalk. You could find that in, say, Fred Astaire and others, but still, he perfected it. Cobain came up with a different way of writing songs than, you know, three verses or two verses, a bridge, and then, you know, a third verse and chorus, refrain. He came up with sort of a, where the song is more like a, instead of sort of circular, it's more kind of a growth, kind of a more linear, I guess you would say. I don't know the technical terms, but I know it from listening to it, what he's trying to do. And it would just kind of end, you know, at the highest point, louder and louder, 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 over, which is not the way traditional pop songs are made. And you hear, I think, a little of that in Birth 3, and it's just a tremendously effective technique. And you see, even the way I do it in my own homemade amateur way when I have my little hot dog song to start the podcast, why do I start off by stuttering and with some indecisive sort of white noise the way a lot of songs do? Because it's so fucking beautiful when it breaks into the clear. The metaphor just instinctively leaps to mind of the clouds clearing off and the sun coming out, or like I said, like the Parcheesi roadblock on the highway breaking up and you can bust down the road in your muscle car, you know, doing 90, like, God damn, the assholes are out of the way and now I'm cruising. It's a glorious feeling. You want to make people feel, that's why people do art. Show you the world, make you feel good about something, like, wow, man, that's awesome. I love that Bird 3 song. Now, all right, I feel good that I've discharged that because it's been in my mind for a long time. But my point is, the second point is really the inspiration of music. I wasn't thinking about any of that right now. I've been in a hour-long battle on Twitter with Boer folk, who are basically like South Africa's version of the morons that inhabit the U.S. South. And then, I've got my Bible. And you know, and this is going to relate to something we're going to say after another little musical break. The Boer folk are very religious folk, as are the kind of the rural hinds in the South, and they love their Bible more than anything. And if the Bible obstructs their political progress, they don't care. They cling to the Bible, truly, as Obama said. And that's why the leftists are tied up in crap like that so much, and they have fewer problems simply going around people like that, whose only real strategy seems to be we'll resist. In the sense, we won't give in to them, but we can't ever go in the aggressive and the offensive and defeat them. I think they could, but they don't seem to be able to in practice. And so, the Boer folk, when you argue with them, are always, oh, we went away from God's word. That's why the problem came. And then the one today, oh, God's on our side. Oh, God's on your side, huh? So God's out there letting these Kaffirs go out there and slice up these old farm women and boil their feet. God's in your... When's God going to kick in? Why is God's... You know, you'd think someone that powerful, and God is usually portrayed as omnipotent, all-powerful, literally all-powerful, omni, all-powerful, potent, powerful. Are you just going to keep on standing there with his hands in his pockets like he always does? Oh, God works in mysterious... Yeah, God works in mysterious ways because they can't be figured out, because he's not actually working at all. Okay, that's, you know, if God were working in, were actually working in real ways, there would be some predictive power, you know, but like, as with the term psychopath, it's all applied after the fact. Oh, he's just, well, okay, well, how come you can't identify these people beforehand and tell what they're going to do? You always know they're a sociopath or a psychopath after the fact. Same with God. Well, you know, he's at work, we can't, it's beyond human reason to figure out how. But yet they always know it's God. How can you... It's the same thing. How can you know that you can't know God's way? I mean, it's the same thing as saying you can know God's way and susceptible to the same laws and the same classification we'd make for anything, or the same demands this we'd make for anything to prove that it's operating. If you can't make it out ever, then it ain't there. It really is that simple. But it's the Christian doctrine that's preaching that everything with a face has a human soul of inestimable value and utter intrinsic merit and worth, and we have to be concerned about it. So that this is the morality that prevents white people from seeing that blacks need to be classed as a dangerous wild animal and dealt with in that way. And if they're threatening white society, they need to be put down, and they manifestly are. In South Africa, more than any place else on Earth, it's more demonstrable. But if your morality, if your supposed higher morality, your moral sense prevents you from doing what your intellect and your sense organs indicate needs to be done, then I don't have much sympathy for you. You are evolutionarily unfit, and you go out of business, and that's what's going on. The white men who are going to succeed are not going to be Christians. They're not going to think like Christians, for sure. That is just self-evident. Now, I want to hear, I don't know about you, but I want to hear a little social distortion. And so that's what we're going to do right now. But first, I want to say just one more thing. All life emanates from the soil. It emanates!
what you're doing now and when you're coming back.
All right, now that was very good. Now we're going to listen to something that I'm going to make some points off. I think you're going to find this absolutely amazing and very fast. Here we go. This is going to be about maybe a minute. Listen to the lyrics.
Radio station the very next day. Hey, Fab, I'm going to kill you. Lyrics coming at you with supersonic speed.
JJ Fab.
Summon, I'm a human, I'm a human, summon, I'm a human. What I got to do to get it through to you? I'm superhuman, innovative, and I made a rubber. So that anything you say is sticking, shaking off of me. And it'll glue to you. I'm devastating, more than ever demonstrating how to give a motherfucking audience a feeling like it's levitating, never fading. And I know the haters are forever waiting for the day that they can say I fell off. They'll be celebrating because I know the way to get them motivated. I make elevating music. You make elevator music. Oh, he's too mainstream. Well, that's what they do when they get jealous, they confuse it. It's not hip-hop, it's pop, cause I found a color way to fuse it. With rock, shock rap, with dot. Don't wanna lose yourself and make them lose it.
I don't know how to make songs like that. I don't know what words to use.
Let me know when it occurs to you. While I'm ripping any one of these verses, the verses use curtains. I'm inadvertently hurting you. How many verses I gotta murder to? Prove that if you were half as nice as songs, you could sacrifice virgins to. School flunky, pill junkie. But look at the accolades, these skills blow me. Full of myself, but still hungry. I bully myself cause I make me do what I put my mind to. When I'm a million leagues above me. Ill when I speak in tongues, but it's still tongue and cheek. Fuck you, I'm drunk. So Satan, take the fucking wheel. I'm asleep in the front, pumping heavy D in the voice. Still chunky, but funky. But in my head, there's something I can feel tugging and struggling.
Did you hear that? Full of myself, but still hungry. Great line. That's going to relate a little to what we're going to talk about now. And this podcast is not going to go on forever, maybe 45 minutes or an hour, and we've already done, probably 20 minutes. Let's see. What I want to talk about is a little article I found yesterday. I was looking at Twitter, and it was a tweet from Michael Hoffman, who's the Catholic mysticist, I guess you'd call him, the guy who investigates Illuminati-type stuff. But when he sticks to the world of reality, he's fairly interesting. But he came across an interview with someone, and it talks about the thing that I've been concerned about and written an awful lot about repeatedly about putting principle ahead of personality. And it's framed a little bit differently, but it's the same issue, the same, I don't like to use issue, that's a Jew term, the white term is problem. It's the same problem the Catholics have to struggle with to avoid being subverted in their institution. And incidentally, that Eminem bit, which was about a minute selection from Rap God, his latest release, I guess, embodies what I consider the Aryan conception of pride. Full of myself, but still hungry. So he recognizes, as I've written in recent days, he has a fuller, deeper conception of pride. Pride can be both good and bad. The Catholic Church says pride is bad and the ultimate sin and the cause of the rest of the sins. Satan was prideful, hence rebellious. So that's why they see that as kind of the sin that causes the rest of the sins. We're rebelling against God, and of course they know what God is and they know what God wants. And you're supposed to be a sheep and humble and submissive, but Eminem has a fuller, deeper idea, and as long as you keep the feedback loop to reality, you can be as proud as you want. As Babe Ruth said, or someone said, I think it was Babe Ruth, it ain't bragging if you can do it. And so if you listen to this particular song that he released, you know, he's kind of reprising, as he does in many of his songs, his life, you know, being called a gay, fag-looking little kid because he's white and amidst the world of all these niggers. He not only survived that world, he came out on top, and he's the best rapper there ever was. And yet he's the whitest-looking one with light blue eyes and blonde hair. And so the way I like to put it is, he hid his light under a bushman, but he still outshines all shine comers. He bested all the blacks at rap. So the white man, and it's like I said in other places, the white man, every anti-white meme I've ever seen circulated in the left was come up with by a white man. And I was going to get into that Suey Park thing. I've been messing with that. She's an Asian supposed comedian who isn't funny, but she calls herself a comedian who started the cancel Colbert. Cancer was attacking the Jew owner of the Washington Redskins, not as a Jew, of course, but as an evil white man who seeks to retain the traditional name of the football team in Washington, the Redskins. And the left wants him to get rid of it. And Colbert mocked it. And, of course, Colbert's persona is of a right-wing buffoon conservative. But Park, to draw attention to herself, as it turns out, rather than protesting, she appeared to whine about the racism, but really she was just trying to troll and draw attention to herself. But, of course, a lot of the leftists thought she was directly serious. And it really doesn't matter, as it just shows that the cross the liberals have to bear is that minorities they champion are too dim to pick up satire, most of them. Now, actually, Park is not too dim to pick it up, nor is Michelle Malkin, who jumped on the leftist ship. The problem is they're just not funny. The way you beat someone like Colbert is to be funnier than he is, and that's not something that these right-wingers, let alone these noseless pinnays, are capable of doing. So they whine. And she actually had a fair amount of leftist ideology in the article that appeared at Salon, which I believe I've linked and posted. The funniest thing was she does all this whining about white men, then she's like, well, why weren't you protesting back then? Well, I was waiting for Twitter to be invented. So they need whites, and this is the comment I left at Salon. She's waiting for the white men to invent the medium that will allow her to bash whites. You know, these people are not really all there mentally. But anyway, let's get on to the Catholic piece that Hoffman dug up, because this concerns the white nationalist cause. We see it in a different circumstances, allows us to see it more easily, or at least from another perspective, helps us understand it. Okay, interview with Roberto de Mattei, I assume it's pronounced. And basically what we've got here is a very liberal pope, and I pulled up an article. Pope Francis, solidarity for Lampedusa migrants. So, you know, they've got all these Africans, very much like in Camp of the Saints, and they're trying to get into Italy and Spain. And typically, you know, there'll be 1,000 of them there trying to, and there's a detainment center built for 200, and then, so of course, the conditions aren't that great. It's not Italy's fault, but the conditions aren't that great. Then the leftists can whine, no, people are illegal, everyone has a right to go wherever they want, and the rest of the usual anti-white whining. And what's the Pope doing to help this? Well, he's taking the side of the leftists, because he is a leftist. He's basically a greasy wop from South America, and he's on the side of the shitbags. And against the quality people, which makes sense. You know, look at his religion, Catholicism. What does Catholic mean? It means general. It means we take all comers, like a lowest level street walking whore. They're open to anybody with a $5 bill, and except Catholics, you don't even need the $5 bill. They'll take anybody, but they prefer drunks, pedophiles, druggies, and the rest of the defectives, you know, the people that Jesus partied with. Oh, yeah, they don't say he partied with them. He can't, quote-unquote, help them. He was helping them. He was improving their lives by making them a Christian instead of a drunk, a thief, an alcoholic, or a junkie. And you're free to believe that. Now, let's see. Blah, blah, blah. Pope Francis, solidarity for Lampedusa. Lampedusa, I believe, it's either on the mainland or it's some little island right off of Italy. That's where a lot of these nigger corks end up after their crappy vessels collapse, and the ones that don't drown end up in places like Lampedusa. The ones that don't end up as protein in a shark's belly, aka good niggers. Jeez, when I speak above me. Okay, and this is, let's see, news.va, so this is from the Vatican. And there's a JPEG. Pope Francis is homilies. Homily is a sermon. So, Vatican Radio. Okay, so this is coming direct from the Pope. In his homily Monday at Monday morning's Mass in Casa Santa Maria, Pope Francis spoke about the Samaritan who saw and was moved with compassion, keeping his heart open to humanity and thus bringing himself closer to God. And the picture accompanying this article shows, very much like those U.S. military photos that they try to keep hushed up, all long rows of coffins that are presumably the dead niggers floating in the drink that they fished out and gave them a $2,000 coffin apiece, laid out in long rows in a warehouse. That's the picture accompanying this article. So there's Good Samaritan, moved with compassion, keeping his heart open to humanity, thus bringing himself closer to God. You know, people of small minds fall in love with these abstractions like humanity. Let me tell you, folks, that's a pretty broad umbrella. It covers a lot of things that maybe are pretty discrete and different and incompatible, one might say, as the fascists are famous for saying, not everything with a human face is human. And really, that makes a lot more sense than grouping niggers and whites under the same taxonomic category, right? At least for getting along and living together purposes. I don't know, they may be able to interbreed, but that's only one aspect of things. The importance of truly, quote, seeing human tragedy, remaining compassionate, and rejecting the globalization of indifferent. All these, so basically the Pope is this leftist cunt, like so many others, who loves to blather on about how high and holy and moral it is to care about these useless niggers who are illegally trying to enter the world of a superior species where they will, as we know, mess it up. And the Pope is on the side of the messers up, not the cleaners up. The Pope is thus a social negative. And we whites should never shrink from saying that, because we might think it's impolitical or we impolitic, or we need the support of these clowns. We don't need support of these clowns. We need to, as Abe Lincoln said, we need to stand with a man when he's right, and we need to depart from him when he's wrong. The Pope is wrong. We're not on his side. And the Pope is not just wrong in the sense of being mistaken in this one instance. He's wrong for doctrinal reasons. Because, as I've harped a million times, the Catholic, the traditional Christian view is everything with a face is human. Everything human, everything hominid, has an immortal soul of inestimable and intrinsic value and worth. God created it. So when a gang of niggers picks a baby up and bashes its head into the wall, and then they take the mother and they slice her throat after raping her a couple times, and they take the grandmother and they cut off the soles of her feet and plunge them into boiling water, all those creatures, they may have gone astray a little bit. You know, not even a Catholic is going to deny that too hard. But let's get back to what really matters here, man. These things have an immortal soul of inestimable worth, man. Who can deny that? I can deny that. I really can. I will. I do. Frequently, often, roughly, obnoxiously. Because I get off on it. Why do you have to be so crude? Because I get off on it. It's like Chet said in Weird Science. I want to butter your muffin. Was that not great? Wasn't not? I mean, if you had a wussy little kid brother like he did in that. And whoever says kid brother. I've never heard anyone in real life say, oh, my kid brother. My kid. No one says that in real life. That's totally on the page. It's very much akin to acting where they like close the door and then they lean back in. No one does that in real life. Or like on the telephone where they put their, what is that thing they do with a phone that no one ever freaking does in real life? I don't know. There's one or two things like that that you see in acting. So no one ever says, my kid brother, my kid. I just said it there, but no one ever says it. If you had a wussy little brother like that kid, you would want to abuse him too and punch him just for being a little wuss. And I got to admit, I feel like that way. All life comes from the soil, Cordy. It emanates. And the enthusiasm with which Jim Carrey portrayed the Jew squeeze, it got in my heart, man. In a way, the Pope, with all of his love for these useless niggers that are bobbing around, never could. But different things reach different men. Okay. So, where were we now? So, yeah, the Pope's on the side of the useless niggers. That's freaking groovy. And let's see if there's anything else in that article that's worth talking about. Yeah, there are roughly 1,000 people. When is this from? 2000. Okay, so this is like from last October. So this is about five or six months ago. So 194 bodies been recovered, blah, blah, blah. But they thought there were a bunch more trapped in a hole. 1,000 of these suckers that they call people in Lampedusa's Center for First Aid and Welcome. The conditions are not really sustainable because they've only got 250 places. Okay, well, yeah. How is that Italy's problem that Africa discharges a bunch of these defectives across the comparatively small ocean than is the Mediterranean Sea, and they wind up in Italy? Africa, these countries in Africa, half them have 100 million people. They can flush an endless number of shit-colored, shit-brained hominids into successful, clean, white, stable Europe. You know, so this idea, oh, human compassion, well, where does it end, man? They're going to drown us. We have to worry about ourselves, not about them. Let them into the Vatican. That's a huge place. Let them live there. Oh, he didn't want to do any part of that. I guarantee you that. Now listen to this again and just hear how good this is and try to pick up the words.
On a cable channel, so AJ went straight to the radio station the very next day. Hey Fab, I'ma kill you. Lyrics coming at you with supersonic speed.
JJ Fab.
Summon, I'm a demon, I'm a human, summon, I'm a human. What I gotta do to get it through to you, I'm superhuman.
Do you seriously not get physical pleasure from listening to how quick he's doing that? I do. I just absolutely love that.
Oh, he's too mainstream. Well, that's what they do when they get jealous, they confuse it. It's not hip-hop, it's pop, cause I found a colorway to fuse it. With rock, shock rap, with dot, go and lose yourself and make them lose it.
I don't know how to make songs like that. I don't know what words to use.
Let me know when it occurs to you while I'm ripping any one of these verses. The verses, you, it's curtains, I'm inadvertently hurting you. How many verses I gotta murder to? Prove that if you were half as nice as songs, you could sacrifice virgins to, School flunky, pill junkie, but look at the accolades, these skills blow me. Full of myself, but still hungry.
Man, I like that. Now, let's see. All right, we're going to get to this one article now. Where is it? Where is it? Where are you? Where are you hiding from me? Come out, come out, come out, come out. So, that was to set the context and show you where the Pope's head's at, man. How the Vatican is thinking. They're all about Italy being filled with Africans. So, the Pope sides with the masses. After all, that's where the numbers, the big numbers are of his clients. He knows the demographic trends. He knows that whites are but a tiny percentage of the world. He knows that the future of the church, if it has one, is going to be brown and black. And, you know, he repeats, we have no more need to respect him than we have anyone else repeating the same bogus doctrines. The fact that a bunch of Chuzzlewitz anoints him, their great leader. Oh, God's vicar on earth. So God is a moron, huh? That's great. God is like some Sonny Bono writ large or U2 Bono writ large, I meant to say, wearing purple glasses, looking down and preaching a doctrine of love for everything but sense. I don't buy it. Anyway, where is it? Here it is. Okay. This is an interview with a guy named Roberto De Mattei. And he pulls up something here I really want to talk about because it pertains. So he worked with Radio Marti. Now this, at some point, was or is like a more traditionalist Catholic sort of not controlled by Jews mass media outlet serving Poland and Eastern Europe, or maybe just Poland. I just remember them from years ago. I'm not too sure of the specifics. But anyway, he was fired from there, and apparently because he supports the sort of pre-Vatican II traditionalist church views. And so the matter in question here is how the church has been subverted, and the broader matter of concern to white nationalists is, do principles matter at all? Or is it simply a matter of people and being friends and mixing? And I argue that principles do matter. Principles protect people, something Eric Thompson likes to say. If you choose the right principles, they are going to protect you. You can't protect them, really, but they can protect you. And the right principle is, you've got to know who your friends are and who your enemies are. That goes back to Carl Schmitt, that some of you intellectuals will know. And the conservatives are not your friends. The conservatives are people who might overlap with our nationalist cause a lot in that they favor daily normality, as it were, sexual normality, neighborly normality. But ultimately, they're on the side of cowardice and self-interest. They're not going to stick their necks out unless they think they've got a sure victory. That's just the type they are. And they tend to be religious, and the religious do not place the value on race that we see in it. When you argue with Catholic intellectuals about race, they will always say you're worshiping the altar of your own blood, whereas you're supposed to be worshiping at their altar, worshiping their Semitic god and his Semitic science fiction hero's son, and literally, according to them, not to me, literally swallowing his blood and eating his body. That's what their sacrament of communion is. Literally, cannibalism, if you take what they say seriously. So, it's hard to take Catholicism seriously for anything other than the numbers of people who've been inculcated into the cult. Of course, most of them don't even understand Christianity or its doctrine, so that's kind of the world we live in. That's part of the intellectual problem that we face. But, let's see now. I've highlighted and underlined the part that I... And this is posted at VNN. This is in the Christianity... I renamed it last night again. The number one, Christianity is Anti-White Thread, post 836. And that's in one of our top two main forums, either this just in or the general discussion. You can find it there. Stickied, so it's there for all times. And the photo of the guy shows a sober, intelligent-looking man. He has the type of glasses intelligent people usually wear. Now, here is the crux of the matter. I'm going to read a little bit, and then I'm going to comment on it. And again, this is from... It doesn't really matter where this interview appears. I don't know what it is. It's some kind of traditionalist Catholic blog on the internet. I've got the links there. Anyway, this is a traditionalist Catholic interviewing a traditionalist Catholic named Roberto de Matteo, who was fired by Radio Maria, which is kind of, I guess, more of a traditionalist Catholic, or at least it was, mass media outlet in Poland and Eastern Europe. He says, De Matteo, M-A-T-T-E-I, and not someone I'd ever heard of before yesterday, says, oh, God damn it, I had it, and it fished away from me. Where is it? He says, okay, this is the interviewer speaking. He says, today there is the conviction that one can remain a Catholic whatever one thinks or does. Now, again, everything I'm saying here, think of it in relation to white nationalism. There's a conviction one can remain a Catholic whatever one thinks or does. So an objective morality is no longer perceived as a truth that is above and beyond man, but that everything is subjective and relative, where each person, in the end, understands freedom as the power to do what he likes. For a Catholic who lives immersed in a version of life like this, it is even more difficult to witness the truth. Immersed in a society that seems deaf and which has taken a path that is diametrically opposed to that indicated by the Ten Commandments. How can one in a concrete way live a life of Christian witness? What is the task today to which one who professes himself truly Catholic is called? And now the response from De Matteo. This is the part I wanted to talk about. The phrase with which, he says, De Matteo says, the phrase with which the French writer Paul Bourget concludes his novel Il Demone Meridiano, translated into Italian by Marco Solfanelli, is of note. Quote, this is, he's quoting a novelist with a French name's Italian novel, I suppose, Il Demone Meridiano. Or I guess it was translated into Italian, so I'm assuming it was a French novel originally. Now, Paul Bourget is not one I've ever heard of, but anyway, Bourget wrote in his novel, quote, "It is necessary to live as one thinks if one does not wish to end up thinking as one lives." And then De Mattei says, this sentence contains a profound truth, and I agree with that. And what he's saying is if you don't live a consciously, purposively intentional life, and a lot of this stuff is written about by the minimalists, the stuff I've been down through in Living White section, I've got a section on decluttering and minimalism, and I linked to essays from theminimalist.com, a couple of younger guys who were rich and gave it up to live a simpler life, and they really make a lot of this kind of thing. You need to live purposefully. Think through everything that you're doing. Live consciously and intentionally. And this is what the Catholic is saying in a very different context from what we are in a white thing, but it amounts to the same thing. Make sure that everything that you do is in line with how you think you should live. And it will work out better for you and better for your political cause and better for the entire world. And what he's saying is if you don't do that, you're going to fall into some bad habits, and your thinking is going to end up being nothing more but rationalizing those bad or self-destructive or racially, nationally destructive ways. Do you understand that? You've got to get on top of yourself, dominate yourself, so that every single thing that you do is in line. There's a Gleichschaltung, there's a coordination of your entire sphere of activity, of everything that you do to promote the ends that you wish to promote. And you figure those out by introspecting, by looking within yourself and say, well, this is the kind of person I want to be. I want to live in this kind of society. And if you think, well, I want to live in this kind of society, it imposes certain duties on you. It forces you to act in certain ways if you are to be honest and have integrity and be aligned in your purpose and your intention and what you actually do. And of course, no one is perfectly aligned. We're all a little hypocritical. But still, if you think things through and act in line with your greater purpose, then you become a serious and substantial person. If you don't, then you just flotsam and jetsam, drifting on the zeitgeist. See the zeitgeist, whatever come, oh yeah, well, I'll chase this. You're like a dog walking around in a park, you know, any little thing attracts your nose and you're off and running. And you never really get where you're going. Maybe you have a fun time or whatever until your body wears out. But overall, I think whites have a need for this kind of thing. And if we don't supply a greater meaning, context, and purpose, then the Catholics will. But here, of course, the Catholics have been around for 2,000 years. And what an utter and embarrassing and humiliating failure it must be to say that after 2,000 years, you can't tell a Catholic. You can't tell that a man is a Catholic until he tells you. That, too, is a profound truth. That says that after 2,000 years, they haven't been able to produce a good man. You know? I can tell an Amish before he tells me he's Amish. I can even often guess that someone might be a Mormon before they tell me, but Catholic, no. And it's average sort of people. Not principled. There's nothing in them that compels respect, regardless of my atheism and my disagreement with their religious philosophy. And that's why I say the only religious Christian types that I've come across where I do have some respect are the Amish and the Mormons, because they live it. And the rest really don't. It's just words. They're idiots, you know. Oh, you need to be saved. No, I don't need to be saved. You need to be saved by Jesus. I don't need to be saved by Jesus. I don't need to be redeemed. Call me a sinner, I just say I have this nature like people have a nature like any other animal. I mean, if you are the one deciding that it's sinful, and in everyday human terms, of course, there's bad and good aspects to it, but I don't get carried away and think there's something bigger to it than that. That's silly. The Greeks had the idea of just moderation and all things. They didn't go around moral. Like Christians brought the moral sense to the world, and that has just added infinitely to the misery that we experience when you look at all these people running around, I'm good, I want to be a good person, but they never really think about what they're doing. It's so formulaic and rote and they cut the feedback loop so that when they do things, it's good to help Haitians. And then you see a photo of them helping Haitians, you know, before the woman gets raped and the man gets his throat slit. And there was a woman, it was in the Peace Corps, who wrote an article about that, about getting raped by some Haitian male she'd been trying to help all this time. Of course, she's a typical anti-white bitch, anti-white male bitch, and she gets raped by the Haitian, but they never learn even after it happens. It's like I said, WASP girls ought to spend their time learning how to cook food that won't make a badger vomit. You know, instead of running off to join the Peace Corps, save niggers. You know, that's a more useful use of your time. I said, joining the Peace Corps is what WASP do in place of having actual culture, like cooking food and living the good life. But imagine the poverty of an imagination that thinks like supplying the water to people who are too genetically stupid to serve themselves with running water is a good thing. You have to be absolutely without imagination, flat, and just deeply stupid in a high IQ way to believe something like that. And yet they do, you know, and if you're not on the same page, you're evil yourself. And of course, the Catholics aren't really any different. I mean, we see, you know, a bunch of dead niggers wash up on the shore, but, oh, we're supposed to be compassionate. Why should we be compassionate to them? They're not compassionate to us. We need to look out for ourselves and not kid ourselves hubristically that we're stronger than we actually are. That's where a lot of this comes from, is they think they have so much excess strength they can use it to fix niggers. And they ignore all the evidence that shows they can't fix niggers, not by giving them money, not by giving them legal privilege, not by jamming them in next to whites and messing up white kids' education. None of that works. They don't care. They think they're little gods themselves. But we racialists can be smarter than that and worry about our own kind, protecting and advancing it. So as this guy says again, it is necessary to live as one thinks if one does not wish to end up thinking as one lives. Just rationalizing whatever scummy or not even necessarily scummy, but just directionless things that we do that are random. But white nationalism can give us, what we're doing here is competing with the Jesus cult to provide a context that whites find plausible and useful and helpful and even necessary to live the kind of life they want to live. And I think I've always been acutely conscious of this. And I've talked about this before when I was walking around in college and thinking, man, nothing's prepared here. It's just you take random courses. They don't lead to any particular end. It's like, what's the entire purpose of education if we aren't part of something larger, stretching through generations, heading in a direction? I mean, it just seems all ripped up. And, you know, take this class or take this class. No one ever talks about your race, your people, who they are, and where they're going. And so I see the attraction of something like Christianity that does offer an anchoring and a context, but it's not appealing to me. And I honestly believe if you had any kind of equal competition in racial stuff or Christian stuff, people are going to choose the racial stuff. And I maintain that is the basis of why Catholicism has a deep and abiding hatred of racialism. And it's based in a real, legitimate fear that a coherent, organized racialism will supersede Catholicism, because it will be specific to whites and it will emphasize strength rather than be general to all people and emphasize weakness. They can call it love, but it is weakness. And I maintain that is what the Nazis, most of whom were Catholic by background, at least the leadership, had discovered themselves, and that's what they were on the way to doing. The people, the common people, will always admire an organization like the SS, just like they might admire the U.S. Marines for having, or the SEALs, or some advanced Army or Army Rangers, because the common people will admire strength and they will admire rigor and standards, even if they can't meet them. You get the common people looking up is what you want to say. To join the SS, you not only have to be physically qualified, you have to be morally qualified. A lot of people don't know that. Morally qualified to join the SS. I thought they were evil. Well, no, you have to be morally regular, you have to be physically fit, you have to be intellectually of a standard, you have to prove document your lineage back, I think it was 300 years. So an elite group of whites dedicated to racial protection. This is the kind of thing that will supersede the Semitic cult that is Christianity. We whites simply need to come together and provide that. And we can do it. And the Christians know it. That's why they oppose communism, and communism causes them to suffer, but not deeply. Communism is not a vital threat to Christianity. It's a superficial threat. And in fact, Christianity thrives on suffering. That's why I never talk about, I say exterminate the Jews because that will end Judaism. But you can't exterminate Christians because it's like saying you're going to exterminate stupidity or cowardice. It's not possible. And in fact, the more you harp on something like that, it just makes them feel better about themselves and more right. The way you deal with them is by mocking them and by building a superior institution and simply winning the battle for hearts and minds. Aryan kids are not born Christians. They have to be made into Christians by being made fearful and indoctrinating with this bogus worldview that doesn't appeal to anyone who's adult and can think rationally. The only people that Catholics can draw as adults are basically people who've made some serious botch of their life by becoming a drunk or a druggie or some other kind of defective, and then they turn to the church. And I'll admit, the church probably is better. It probably is better that someone's a Christian than that they're a junkie or they're an alcoholic, at least in personal terms. Racially, it might be better if they just kept going down that road and eliminated themselves in the way that, you know, someone who's going to use meth continually is probably going to exit this world without reproducing before too long, which is good. You can't fight nature that hard. But the Catholics have a Weltanschauung. That's a German word that basically in English, probably the closest English word is just worldview. It's not simply a political position. It's an entire all-encompassing philosophy and worldview of this is where I am in the universe. This is how I see the universe. White nationalism is a competing worldview. We say this is how we see the universe. This is your we offer a competing contextual view of things to white people. To the extent we are consistent and live in line with our ideas, we're more impressive. Just the way Amish are impressive, even to an atheist like me, because although I very much disagree with their way of life, I respect that they do, in fact, live by their principles. That makes them consistent. That makes them predictable. I know what I'm getting when I deal with an Amish. I would like people to be able to say that about me as a white nationalist. When I deal with Linder, I know what I'm getting. I know what he's going to say. I know what he's going to do because of his position, whether I agree with them or not. And I'm not making that as a personal point. I'm making that as a political point. White nationalists should be just as consistent, but unfortunately, they're not. We're just like, we have the same thing to complain of that De Mattei has to complain of, which is that, you know, we are so mixed in with Christian conservatism that it's hard to tell what is what. We just seem vaguely kind of like conservatives who whine about the same sort of things, but we're a little more concerned with racialism, and then we have this swastika stuff going on. Some of us are Klans. It's just very vague, hazy, and unclear. And the only way to get through all that is to have one strong, principled party that absolutely cuts with the rest of the crap, dominates the field, and then draws people into it and orders them according to their willingness to live by these principles. And if they won't, they're not let in, or they're dumped when they prove they're just there for the shits and grins. That's the way to do it. And if you have a force like that, it will absolutely cut through the soft butter that is the right, which is the normal majority. It's not a silent minority. It's a normal majority. It's just being bossed around by people who aren't as fearful as the Christians and the conservatives are, as the organized queers and Jews who have the mass media and can browbeat anyone else. Well, if you can't stand up to being called a racist, then you're not much political use to anyone other than as a silent check writer. And those of us who can stand up to that for whatever reasons, or decide that we can stand up to it, have to lead as strongly as they can, laugh, mock, and go forward as fast as we can. And De Mattei says, life should be consistent with ideas, But the ideas must in their turn be consistent with great metaphysical and moral principles that regulate human life. For this reason, we must be men of principles, because the world is based on principles. Okay, and that's how the Catholics see it. Of course, they have the idea that God created the world the way they say it is, and they want to live in line. Now, we may disagree with him, but we appreciate that his appreciation of consistency and the need for it. And that, this truly is a problem within white nationalism that I wanted to call attention to today. And the other, one other point, I kind of made it on the forum, vnnforum.com, but I'll make it here. The other way in which this pertains to us is objective reality exists, and people, a certain someone I won't name is one of the greater offenders here. They want to believe that they can win in a way that's comfortable to them by doing whatever they want, rather than looking at the situation objectively, analyzing it intellectually, objectively, and saying, well, this is where we are, this is what we need to do. They want to say, this is what I feel good doing, so this is what I'm going to do, and somehow we can win in that way. And that is irresponsible, immoral, and just plain weak. It's weak-minded. And I really think this is what we lost more than anything when Pierce disappeared. He always took the big picture, and I consciously try to fill in for him in an inferior way, of course, but to look at the very biggest picture and say, this is where white people are, this is what we need to do as a race, like a coach to white people. He always provided, he didn't say, oh, well, you know, anything that we do is good, just because at least we're doing something. That's the dumbest damn thing, that, and it's so common, at least we're doing something. Something is not good enough. Something has to be anchored into a larger strategy so that the effect it has is cumulative. It begins to build up. That's something I've harped on for years and will continue to. The very nature of the challenge we face is not something that can be solved locally or at the state level. It's at the central state, the national level, or even the global level. As we see, the people in Greece are being interfered with. The Greek nationalists are being interfered with by Jews out of New York City. Now, theoretically, there's no way to explain that other than Jews are truly an international nation that is bent on destroying the nationalism of all other peoples. And yet I've seen even white nationalists, two of them, fairly serious minds, fairly activists, oh, well, you know, they try to explain that, oh, that's some, Greece isn't relevant to us, that's just, you know, oh, well, they're being bossed around by Jews out of New York. Why did Jews in New York care about what's going on in Greece? Even these men who ought to know, no, you just keep it legal, and, well, they're thrown in jail because, you know, you get to a point where you're like, wow, these people are so seriously delusional. They don't see that our enemy cheats, lies, throws people in jail for no reason. No, it's our behavior is the only thing that matters. They really are like, even though they're not Christians, they have that same Christian simpleton mentality where they just deny there's any kind of enemy operation at work. This is something that irritates, it's unmanly. It's frankly just plain unadult. The reason white nationalism has had problems is not so much the defective personality of its leaders or the bad principles they had. It's because they've been suppressed and attacked. The problems truly do come from the outside. Of course, a lot of simpletons will try to blame others for their own failures, but it's not white nationalists who have failed. It's not like white people don't know how to organize. It's not like white nationalists don't know how to organize. They do. The problems that they've had, the reason that it has not taken off is purely due to enemy activity. I could cite 10,000 examples. A VNN hasn't never ever been a formal group, but I could cite 10,000 examples in our 12 to 15 years that we've been around since 2000. Of suppression and oppression and illegal tactics that we've had to endure from the other side. So when I hear, oh, it's our problem, we just need to keep... I'm listening to clowns and simpletons and cowards, and I don't want to hear that stuff. Because it's ridiculous and it's wrong, and you're telling people an outright lie. Okay, I'm not a criminal. I don't do shit that's illegal. But I've been denied, more times than I can even tell you, doing something that was purely legal from pressure behind the scenes. And probably I made a mistake in not even talking about it more because the comfortable bourgeois sitting there who's not actually in this game beyond reading a little stuff for entertainment or maybe writing a check once in a while, maybe I failed to emphasize just how serious this shit is in terms of the essentially illegal pressure that is levied on anyone who tries to stand up for whites. There's all kinds of stuff going on that is pretty hard to believe, and that most of it is carried out namelessly, and people are so easily intimidated and blackmailed these days that if you cause them any kind of problem whatsoever, even if you're a paying customer, they'll just dump you. And like I said, this is apart from even being a overt political association or organization or vehicle. It's just being an information source, along with some street activism. And we've seen what happened there. Anyway, we want to live the principled life. White nationalism is a context and a mindset that competes with Catholicism. It's not something that can be reconciled with it. That makes me very angry when I hear that. And people want to, it's just typical American, Anglo-American anti-intellectualism to think you can just jam all this stuff together. It doesn't matter if they're not really the same. We'll somehow figure a way to work. No, they're competing worldviews. You got to choose one or the other. Causes that succeed when they're rising are intolerant. I am a jealous God. Our cause must be a jealous cause. No, you choose us or you choose them, not both. We force people to make a decision. All right, we've gone on about a little about 66 minutes, I believe, according to my calculations, and I intended to go maybe 45 to an hour. I don't want to go on too much longer because I'm going to do another one in a few days. Love talking to you all. It's vnnforum.com. I'm Alex Linder. I'm very important in my own mind. And you'll see that reflected in the tweets that I send out from AlexLinder5. And hopefully I've got enough background and wit to amuse and entertain you. I hope so. Anyway. oh, man. Excuse me. We're recording this on a Friday morning, and time for me again to go run some errands. I hope we made a little bit of an insight into how music can stimulate artistic breakthroughs. And intuition is kind of realizing something before your mind figures out the logical or rational connection or reason for it. But you can kind of feel it, and it puts you into modes and veins of thinking. As today, it put me into the mode of thinking about the artistic construction of effects in both song and in writing. Every word must serve a purpose. I'm glad we took a little time to, deconstruct or just analyze that and look at it, because that is something I see people brainlessly parroting, and it tires me out. Sometimes you got to be a little sloppy, and then boom goes the dynamite. It enhances the effect, you know. Just as like you have a woman with a beautiful, perfect face, but if she has a little tiny black mole there, it just sets off like, wow, that's how fucking beautiful she is. Look at me. She could be covered with me. But if there's just one of me, it really shows, man, she is freaking beautiful. You see? And as nature has that effect, art can benefit from that effect also. I do that myself. I don't write perfectly or with perfect structure or organization. Sometimes they deliberately use words wrong. But then when you come to the geotic middle, you go, wow, fucking yeah, man, that's some wit. That's a beautiful epigram. You do the just kind of like peel back the cover, and there it is, boom, the reveal. And you're like, oh, damn, man. A solid idea, aesthetically or perfectly, artistically express so that it lives on in the memory. That's what writing is all about, I think. Otherwise, go write a fucking textbook, you know, about screws and bolts and driver's saws and whirligigs and other important things, you know. I can understand why a textbook would be dry. It's purely packed with informative material, but artistic writing requires something else. And then we also discussed living a principled life so that we can build a worldview that is competitive with the Catholicism. You see, like, this is the only group of people offering answers to life's deeper questions. And you're like, it just makes you draw your breath in just sheer amazement that something as cruddy, as utterly cruddy, as Catholicism, Christianity or Jewish multiculturalism are the only players in the game for the white man's mind. Absolutely sickeningly astonishing. I think you'll agree with me. That's enough for now. Let's close it out with one more song, and I'm going back to the very cute Patti Smyth. Before I do, I'll just repeat once more for the record. You've been listening to Alex Linder at VNNForum.com. You can follow me on AlexLinder5 on Twitter. And now we'll close with a song, and I'll be back at least by... we're recording this. Let's see. What is today? It's 4/4/14. April 4th, 2014. I'll be back at least by next Wednesday, if not sooner. Good day.